So I started with silks. It's like one of the first ones that you start to get into when you're first doing aerial arts, which is like this curtain. And it's really long and flowy. And it's really nice for really graceful like poses and like I want to say lyrical a lyrical dance as a connotation to it or an example because it's very flowy and it's almost like ballet in the air.
This is the Bris Poinsett Show. This is the Bris Poinsett Show. Oh, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bris Poinsett. Along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio of the Portland Art Museum. This is the best of the Bris Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bris Poinsett, and along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio of the Portland Art Museum. You can catch the full show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7. You can also catch clips on youtube.com/Bris Poinsett, plus exclusive bonus content on patreon.com/Bris Poinsett. Make sure to follow us on twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM, that's Numbers with a Z, or the Numbers Podcast Network on thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's Numbers with a Z, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On this episode of the Bris Poinsett Show, Bruce sits down with the incredible circus performer, Belinda Rose. The two talk about what it takes to be a circus performer, the different types of circus performance, and Black circus performance here in the Pacific Northwest.
So this is the Working Artist Working Title Project, and I have a special guest with me in the Numbers studio today, our first time recording one of these episodes. Again, in studio, you love it, the community, right? I have Belinda Rose, performer, artist, teacher, collaborator. Belinda, how are you doing today?
Good. I'm doing really good. Thanks so much for having me, Bruce.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. We've feel like we, traverse in similar circles, but it's good to just sit down, actually, converse, trade notes. I know it's funny. I didn't learn this until way later, but you went to high school with a very good friend of mine up in Park Rose, I believe.
Right.
And, it's just it's Portland. It's a small world. But some of that, I'm curious to bring it to the subject as far as specifically circus arts. When did you get into circus? When did that become a thing where you're I want to pursue this. This is, this is fun. Was it exposure in grade school or high school or what? How'd that come about?
Yeah. So from a very young age, I got to do baton twirling, which is this metal stick with two rubber ends. So I started with that. And my baton coach said, well, if you're going to be on Kelly Cadet's baton team, you got to do all the dances, tap, jazz, ballet, hip hop. So I've been dancing since I was little, been moving and twirling, which started me on this path of circus arts, not really realizing it until I think I was in middle school and my parents took me to see my first Cirque du Soleil show, which was Corteo. It was around 2006 when it was in Portland, back when they would bring in the big top. Mm-hmm. And that was the first of 10 shows I've seen now. But yeah, that after seeing that and all the aerial dance and clowning, I was I love circus arts. This is so awesome. I really want to do this. And then, but I didn't really have a, avenue or a direction. I had a B and I was at A and I didn't see where the road was to get there. Until about 2009, I started taking aerial dance classes in high school my senior year of high school. So I was starting to figure out what I wanted to do next. once I graduated. And so I went to AWOL. That was the first place I started taking classes at. I was doing partner acrobatics and gymnastics at Do Jump, Echo Theater in Hollywood. I've done pre-professional intensives at Pendulum, which was out of the American French International School. So I've traveled all four corners of Portland to take circus arts classes. And that was my journey of learning circus arts. And then when it came to like performing professionally, I auditioned for quite a few different places and just kept working and taking classes and performing and doing a lot of different things. And then I noticed that this club was auditioning for aerialists, and I put in an application and I auditioned like a couple of months after my 21st birthday. So I was just allowed into the actual bars. Mm-hmm. And I auditioned for a live audience and they loved me and I loved it.
Which club are we talking about?
So this was Ankeny's Well, which was a block away from Voodoo Donuts. It's now a ramen place. It's not on the theater side of Voodoo Donuts, but the other side. But it's not even around anymore. I've closed out quite a few different bars in Portland.
Yeah, no, such is the business. But yeah, can you just talk about, like, you have a lot of different like disciplines and sort of like basically like types of performances you do. Can you just kind of like talk about some of the different skills, different types of performances?
So I started with silks. It's like one of the first ones that you start to get into when you're first doing aerial arts, which is like this curtain, and it's really long and flowy. And it's really nice for really graceful like poses and I want to say lyrical a lyrical dance as a connotation to it, or an example, because it's very flowy and it's almost like ballet in the air. Like long lines and all these pretty poses, and you can do drops, which are moves where you start from the top and then you come down like in all these different wraps. And I started with silks, and then I started to try some other I like to call them hard apparatuses, like metal, like a trapeze bar, or like a lyra, which is my favorite. That's the one that I perform the most on, which is like this big circle that hangs in the air. And it's also a very flowy apparatus, but there's also a lot of room to do more drops, more spins, more... it's almost like I equate it a little bit to like pole dancing, where you can spin and you can flip and you can, do all these crazy different tricks and things like that. And to me, it's like a very strong apparatus. Like, that's what I think of when I think of the lyra. Everybody who gets on it looks really strong, in my opinion. The reason why I really like circus arts is because there's so many different disciplines, and with each of them you can do a lot of different things and have like these different themes or styles. I've seen a lot of popping and locking with juggling, and it's really awesome. And I've seen, like modern as well with contact juggling, or with toss juggling, like very modern, abstract performing arts style movements, and jazz, and like I said, ballet, and whether you're you've been dancing professionally or not, circus arts lends itself to movement. So you're gonna move, right. And you're gonna find your own flow, which I think is really cool. Like the ability to not only build a set of skills in this art form, but at the same time create your artistic fingerprint with it.
Yeah. And just in terms of like what kind of time goes into, like you talked about, you know, kind of being around like all corners of Portland in terms of just like picking up the skills at like a young age, but in terms of one, like just what kind of like time goes into just like practicing, and also I imagine a bunch of like conditioning, just because this is a very physical act, but also in terms of like professional development and like opportunities, again, to like develop your skills specifically to be like a circus professional, like I guess like what does that environment or what are those like offerings look like, if that makes sense?
The beginning building blocks of a lot of different circus disciplines are really easy to get into. It might seem difficult at first, like when you think of juggling, you think of three ball juggling, but there's a lot of room and for movement and expression with one or two ball toss juggling, or just some simple tumbling movements, and they're accessible for like for different bodies, for different abilities and capabilities. And I've gotten to actually I did a teacher workshop. It was at Circus Arts Institute in Atlanta, Georgia, the circus arts therapy training, where I learned how to teach like trapeze and juggling to kids with autism and varying abilities. And so, I think circus arts is one of the few art forms that's really accessible to like beginners or people who just haven't flexed their creative muscles so much. And because you're able to at the same time create your artistic fingerprint, like when it comes to being a student, there's a lot of room to grow and progress, and it's a really warm and supportive environment. Everybody's cheering each other on, and we're always talking about something that's not quite right in something, like, hey, can you take a look at this for me and let me know what you like, you got any tips, or so that's really, really awesome. When it comes to the professional track, it's been quite a learning experience for me, like just a journey. I've been performing professionally for 10 years now in Portland, and there's a lot of different avenues for professional circus artistry. I do a lot of burlesque and entertainment shows, like at Dante's. For that portion of it, it's been more of like a networking kind of, like, you know, people who know people sort of thing. But that's like for venues, like the Flow Arts community, they have a really great network of event of event coordinators and DJs and people just like putting together festivals and different things like that. And they're always looking for flow artists, so like POI or contact staff, especially with fire. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves fire.
Not to interrupt, but what is it about fire that's...
I think it's the closeness to something so dangerous, mm-hmm. but so enticing. I mean, I remember as a kid being fascinated with fire and yeah, playing with fire. I mean, I don't know too many kids who haven't played with fire a little bit, but yeah. And so, yeah, seeing other people get to, you know, draw like a little flame on their hand and be able to put it out is very like, it's very cool. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's interesting. You talked about sort of like the community aspect there within sort of like the circus community. And I was just curious as far as like, and we're going to talk about like an exciting effort. You're part of West Coast Black Circus a little bit more in depth in a bit, but as far as just like both when you were coming up, so just as a young person, then now kind of like in a lot of these professional spaces, do you see a lot of other Black people in these sort of like Oregon circus performing, spaces?
Yeah. At the very beginning, me and Zelos, who is another collaborator and founder of West Coast Black Circus, we performed a lot at that old club next to Voodoo Donuts, and we were the only Black people that we could see performing or doing performances like us. Of course, there's Isaiah Esquire, who's amazing. I love him. We went to the same school, actually. He taught me to dance. but yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of Black performers here in Portland. And one of the first Black people that I had met who did circus arts, I met him, Reggie Moore. He passed away a while ago, a few years ago. But yeah, I met him at the American Youth Circus Organization Festival in 2013. And he was just so amazing and wonderful. And I mean, I've seen people of color in Cirque du Soleil shows, but Reggie was me. Like, we're both kids living in America, finding circus, finding community. So yeah, it was just really special to meet him and to know him. And the Black circus community in America has gotten closer and closer, and we're making networks and finding each other, which has been really, really awesome. And yeah, we're inviting each other into our spaces. Zelos just went to Chicago to learn surreal. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we can just get into West Coast Black Circus now, because I think, like you said, like the opportunity to not just like see people doing this, like that's huge, but then to actually like be in community with them and have someone, you know, as your mentor coming up or as like a teacher for you coming up. Obviously, it sounds like it was very influential. But yeah, it sounds like you, Zelos, the organization, you're kind of working to like create just something more like adding to the infrastructure for that. And yeah, can you just tell me what was West Coast Black Circus, and yeah, what was kind of like the impetus behind it though?
Yeah. Yeah, for me, like I said, I've been to many a circus and aerial company here in Portland, and I've seen a lot of different structures for how they work, and did a lot of auditioning and a lot of volunteering. And for me, I just want to make like a black version of that, of what I saw. Yeah, it's just really interesting because in my auditions, I always felt like I was missing something, or yeah, there was just one thing that I needed in order to get in. But when I went to teach at Harriet Tubman Middle School, like circus arts, and doing tumbling with kids through Parks and Rec, I had so much to give, and the kids really showed me that and how important it was for this space. Like, it's not a space that many kids experience to begin with, let alone people of color, and it's a really interesting community. It's a really supportive and graceful and kind community, and it's physically active, it's emotionally present, it's spiritually uplifting, and it's given me so much. And with the West Coast Black Circus, we want to give that to others and to ourselves. Like, we're a little selfish. We want this space for ourselves as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so with that, can you just talk a little bit more as far as like what you're planning to like offer with the organization? And if I'm correct, you all are looking for a physical space right now, right?
Yeah. We're in talks with a few different places who are, giving us space for an all black open gym, get together, meet up, for anybody from just starting out to professional, just all over the spectrum. And, the starting off point is to get us all together, get us doing things together and learning from each other, and figuring out what exactly we want to do, what an education system would look like, what a performance would look like, and just making sure that whatever we're doing, it's what we want to do, and it looks exactly how we want it to look. Like, even just starting off with money, I'm always going into the chat like, stipend. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget to pay ourselves, because that's very important for me, is for us all to be all of our work is important and it's appreciated, and we should appreciate it emotionally and financially.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, a big kind of like impetus with this project is not just, the story of the arts, but also like spurring investment in the arts. And that's what really excites me about West Coast Black Circus, as far as just, again, creating a space, creating something. Because it is different. It's different when it's us, and like when we are taking care of each other directly. And but to bring it back to the money, honestly, like as a working artist, I relate to a lot of what you're saying in terms of one, just having different respective disciplines, but also having a bunch of different things you do, whether it be different types of performances, but then also being a teacher, kind of like, and some of this is just passion. Some of it's also, I imagine, making the ends meet, right? But do you ever have anything you would consider like a typical day as a working artist?
Oh man. Every day feels typical in that it's atypical. Mm-hmm. Like, every day is a little bit of a hustle. Every day is has its wins, and every day there's always something that I'm like, well, I did this, so I'm proud of myself for doing that. I just did a ambiance, which is basically just sitting in pretty poses and creating ambiance for an event. And it was for 420, of course. But yeah, I did quite a bit of running around that day, just doing setup and making sure everything looked okay and I had everything that I needed, and the venue had everything that they needed, and the host. And then a few days later, I got this opportunity. Somebody told me about this music video that this DJ was creating. So I put on some shiny clothes and some little hair extensions with lights and got over to the Den, a club that's been around forever and I've never been to, and I'm born and raised in Portland. But yeah, I just go to this club I've never been to and learn this dance in like 5 minutes, and we're recording. So yeah, it's every day is new. It's got its own adventure.
Yeah, when it comes to like the gigs, is it usually like that where people kind of like seek you out through word of mouth, or is it a thing where it's more of a mix of you kind of like having to like research the clubs and kind of like find them out?
I get pretty much all of my gigs from other people, because I like that better. Like talking to my friends, like, hey, do you know anybody? I'm really bad at cold calls. Mm-hmm. Like my imposter syndrome just like goes right up. So I don't do a whole lot of cold calls to clubs or venues. It's something that I'm working on. I've reached out to a lot of friends who have told me about other venues, or just go-go dancing, or just all sorts of different things. I'll do an Instagram post like that. I see quite a few of those, honestly, from other performers, where it's like a really nice professional shot, and then in the description, I'm available for go-go, burlesque, DM me. So I try it all. I do it all.
Yeah, I mean, I think marketing just as a, independent artist it's difficult. And actually, like, one of the things I've noticed just in, in following your work, and I want to say this is through Dante's, but correct me if I'm wrong, where you've been doing a lot more of these, like, really, very, these stylized clips and whatnot, where I've been thinking, I'm asking about this, I'll just pull it back for a second, because in my own work, I've been, thinking about sort of like the visual of authenticity and what that means, if that makes sense. So like, I use this example in another one, but I'll use it for this. And so if it sounds far off, no, it's coming back. But so like Cameron and Mace started this sports talk show where it's just them talking, to artists that were prominent 15, 20 years ago, talking shit about sports. And like, it could have been like an IG live, just we're doing this from our homes type thing. But Cameron's been in interviews talking about, I really went out of the way to, get this studio set up. We're putting on the suits and everything and doing all that. And it's like, basically, again, sort of this idea of like, making yourself look like official to people and whatnot. And I always come back, obviously, like, I'm here in shorts and a t-shirt. I was wondering, what would I get a different reception? Like, if I came suited up to everything, like, is that something people have? But I bring that back to this because, with marketing, even like having like clips like that, I know just like when I see him through the newsfeed, like, damn, okay, get it, Belinda, you know, like, so I get that if the connection makes sense there. But yeah, has that been, as far as like, one, just for people when they're thinking about like putting promo stuff together, like you work with the photographer there at, again, that's through Dante's, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just like, that's just someone like, it's kind of like taking shots through the show usually.
Yeah.
And do you like, I'm very curious about the process. Like, is there, I don't know, do you have like any like specific directives, or is it just kind of like a, I'm doing my thing, you do your thing, show me the clips later,
yeah,
and magic happens?
Yeah, Caitlin of Blessed Perspective, she does a lot of the photography at Dante's for the Sinferno Cabaret, and she's just amazing. She's so, like, there's a reason why it's called Blessed Perspective. Like, I don't give her any direction. I don't even say where I'm going to go, where I'm going to be. She's just on it. She's, yeah. And I, that, it really helps to have a photographer who has photographed performances and just events in general so well. And yeah, just knows how to get the peak of a movement. Mm-hmm. She's really good at that. Like the apex of a movement. And yeah, she's got a great eye for that. And Lewis, he does the videography for Sinferno as well. And yeah, he does a really good job with the different camera angles and, yeah, just making us look really good. So I really appreciate working with people who are so good at that kind of stuff. I've thought about doing, like, some raw stuff, some, like, just hit the record on Instagram Reels and just go. And then I just stand there looking at the frame like, this is so washed out. I look like I'm wearing baggy clothes. Nobody is gonna see anything. Like, that just makes marketing is, for me, marketing has the same, I get the same feelings about it as I do with cold calls, like convincing somebody that I'm amazing and that it's a privilege for them to be working with me. It makes my skin crawl.
Right.
So when other people make me look good, I'm like, my Instagram feed really is like, look how good these people made me look. Yeah.
I feel that. I mean, not to shout out the crew, but that's why I love being here at the numbers, like, as opposed to just being like on my Zoom screen or something. Like, you know, I got producer Ado. I think is Ambush over there. You know, having the support, like a team, a system that can, like you said, also just that when you're in those positions where you have to, you know, you got to pump yourself up enough just to like perform already, and then trying to like pump yourself up to like audition yourself for other people again is taxing. So like having that team around you is so, it's just helpful. It's helpful, healing, all that good stuff. But to that end, when you think about like other, if you're thinking about like just like supports that whether you or like your peers in circus, kind of like things that like make this work easier, make, especially doing it as an independent artist, like, I guess like where are some areas where it's like, this could be helping elevate or provide more opportunities in the community. Obviously we talked about West Coast Black Circus earlier as, you know, creating a space specifically for Black people. But yeah, there's just like, are there other areas or like, for lack of better terms, just like holes in the system that you see that stand out?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. I think the just representation overall, like we have, yeah, quite a few performance artists in Portland now of color, not just circus artists, burlesque, and all forms of entertainment. And we don't get to run into each other all that much. And so, yeah, just having more opportunities to perform, honestly, which I think would help with the representation. Like if there was more opportunities to perform, it's, yeah, the entertainment in Portland is so unique and so cool, and I'm always fascinated by how many people I meet who don't know. Like it just feels so big to me, like such an integral part of Portland. Like we used to brag about the number of strip clubs per capita in Portland. Like this, that's Portland. That, like, we are debaucherous and we love it. And yeah, and of course, you know, with lockdown and quarantine, it really took a toll on the venues that we used to have. And so, yeah, that kind of answers the representation question. And yeah, it's a part of Portland that is still very much on the road to repair, to improvement. And there's a lot of people within the community who are taking steps towards owning spaces as well as producing more events. So yeah, I'm very hopeful and optimistic about the future of the events and entertainment in Portland as more people of color and more people in the queer community who are taking steps building space for ourselves.
Yeah. I'm gonna bring it back to the money, kind of familiar with that one. As far as like, we've talked a little bit about like opportunities, and just think it's, you know, interesting when you just talk about all the different areas where circus performances can be incorporated. Like, I think it's just, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people, when they think of circus, they think, you know, like old school Barnum and Bailey type thing, or Cirque du Soleil maybe, but you're talking about clubs, you're talking about ambiance at the 420 event, you're talking about, remember I used to go to, was it like Sir Cupcake Showcase? I want to
forget. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, venues like that. But I'm curious as far as like costs as a performer, because like, I assume you're like buying your own equipment, and like, are there other, I guess, like hidden costs, or I guess explicit costs as well, that, you know, someone in the audience like myself wouldn't think about when you're going onto stage?
Yeah. There's always costume, looking good. The music, like putting together the music, or if you're mixing your own music together, a lot of people are doing that. So you got to figure that out, or, you know, pay somebody to help you with that kind of thing. Yeah, I bought my own lira and carabiners and span sets. I went to the Portland Construction Company or something like that on like Interstate or something. And I was just like, hi, I'm an aerialist, and I'm probably the tiniest person that's ever come in here. Like, I felt very tiny going in. Travel. What else? Oh, insurance. Like, as an aerialist, I need to, I'm supposed to have insurance for when I fall out of the sky, but you know, that's a here and there cost. I get it when I can. And yeah, health insurance. That's always like super important. Yeah. It's a big cost. Like, I remember when I was first looking up like the circus artists on jobs.com for, you know, their yearly rate, which I think at the time was like 30 to 40,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, seeing a physical therapist, getting massages. This was like for a Cirque du Soleil artist. Like, yeah, at least a few hours a week would be dedicated to like massages and physical therapy and things like that.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, like getting space to practice in and rehearse in with costume and all that stuff. The space is always like something that people are constantly looking for, is to practice in, especially with aerial dance. Like, there's not a lot of places who even know like what the rigging capabilities, like what that entails, what that looks like. Like, you pretty much know an aerialist is coming in when they're looking at the ceiling. Like, and they're like, could I do something in here? And like that's kind of a running gag.
Yeah. Cause you can't just like rig something up in your bedroom and then just do these practices.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I remember during lockdown, a lot of people were, documenting their journey to getting equipment in their spaces. And, you know, there were more well-to-do white people who were like, oh, I got my own setup. Yay. I can practice at home whenever I want to, which was, yeah, right. Yeah. And then, yeah, whereas all these other venues are they're having to like completely shut down or masks only. And yeah. Yeah. That was an interesting time.
Yeah, I mean, another, for anyone watching this afterwards, another plug for supporting investing in West Coast Black Circus. Space.
Space. Like, space with, like, XYZ, all of the axes. Mm-hmm. We need all of the space.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's very, yeah, very insightful, and first off, thanks again for taking the time. Before I let you go, though, I ask everyone in these interviews same closing question, which is, what is something that's exciting you in the world of art? And it can be local, it could be national, offline we're talking about The Mandalorian, it could be that. What is just something that a project that you're not working on that is really just exciting you right now?
Yeah. I've been seeing and following some digital artists who have completely transformed spaces with digital augmented virtual art. I don't know the right terminology for it, but I've been really, really liking that. It's such a cool way to transform a space and like make a space a movie, like instead of watching a movie on a TV screen, but like being in a music video with the visuals. And yeah, I've been thinking that that's been really cool and wanting to get involved somehow, some way, or meet other artists. Yeah, just the different ways that people have been transforming different spaces. One artist in particular that I've been following and loving is Tobe Njuku Nwigwe. He's an amazing rapper, and just seeing him perform and have fun with his family, his community has been really, really inspirational. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want West Coast Black Circus to be like, just a big family. And we're doing all these different things together. And yeah, everything we do together. And whatever we decide on together. And it's all for each other.
Yeah. Well, Belinda, thank you again for taking the time. Where can people find you if they, you know, want to learn, see you perform, follow you on social media, you know, any websites, any upcoming shows or plugs you want to give?
Yeah. Yeah, you can follow me at The Belinda Rose on Instagram. That's where I put all of my events and performances and action shots and things like that. And then West Coast Black Circus, we've got a lot of things planned. We've got especially for the summer, like festivals and teaching workshops and things like that. So yeah, stay tuned.
Awesome. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Again, you can catch us every Wednesday at 7 p.m on the Numbers FM 96.7. Or you can catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett. If you want access to exclusive bonus coverage, you can go to patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. And make sure to follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM. That's numbers with a Z. Or on the Numbers Podcast Network on all podcasting platforms, or thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's numbers with a Z.